Hello and welcome to this episode of the Event Manager Podcast by Skiff Meetings, the podcast for curious event professionals embracing the future of business events. My name is Miguel Nevsch, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Skiff Meetings. In this episode, titled The Evolution of Wellbeing in Events, I have the pleasure of speaking with Rachel Riggs, Wellbeing Leader at Maritz Global Events. Our conversation revolves around well-being and sustainability for events. We talk about things like the difference between well-being and wellness, the long-term benefits of incorporating well-being at events, what it means to design an event with wellness as a core design principle, what prevented the event industry from connecting with well-being until now, and how sustainability goals impact events. I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation, and I invite you to check out the other episodes of the podcast, which you can find on our website or by subscribing via your favorite podcast service. Greater Phoenix, rising from the Sonoran Desert, has emerged as a premier meetings destination. We earned the Wall Street Journal designation of having a top 10 convention center, as well as the number one airport in the US. We've won citywide mega events from the Final Four to SemiCon West. We've cultivated flourishing intellectual capital in the high-tech and biomed sectors. And we've even put a brewery in our convention center. Why? Well, the desert made us do it. Plan your next meeting in Greater Phoenix. Go to visitphoenix.com/meetings. Hello, and welcome to the Event Manager Podcast by Skift Meetings. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Rachel Riggs, Wellbeing Leader at Maritz Global Events. Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Miguel. Happy to be here.
So, Rachel, we've known each other for a little while, mainly through the pandemic, although we did get a chance to meet in person recently, which is always a novelty, or still a novelty in for most people. But I'd love to just talk a little bit about you, who you are, your journey to kind of getting here, and start wherever you want to start. But I'd love to get a sense of, you know, when you first kind of encountered the event industry, and then How did you get into this role of well-being leader, which I think is a fascinating role, and I think we'll cover that a little bit more later on.
Sure, thanks, Miguel. My journey has been a lifelong journey. So I actually went to Indiana University and studied kinesiology and exercise physiology, and wanted to be a corporate fitness professional. My dream job was being a corporate fitness professional in the Apple corporate fitness center in Cupertino, California, back in the day. And so I really, really wanted to run a corporate fitness center. And then I went to work for the Association for Fitness and Business. And that was all of the people that did exactly that. And I fell in love with meetings and events there, and did that for quite a few years after I graduated. I was actually an intern there, and just started really getting my feet wet in the events industry. And then I went to work on the launch team of the pharmaceutical drug Ambien, and did sleep wellness programs all around the world, but then really missed the events industry, and went to work for Smith Buckland up in Chicago. And all along, I really wanted to have my two professional loves together, come together, which were wellness and events, but the timing was never right. And so I did a lot of different events in the tech world in the 90s, Oracle Open World. I did a bunch of different events for Sterling Commerce and Sterling Software, and met people like Margaret Thatcher and Colin Powell. And it was super fun. But back in my head, I was like, this is just not exactly what I want to do. But it was fun at the time. And then I went on the supplier side for several years. I worked for the city of New York, Vancouver. And I really, Vancouver hit home for me because it's really about, I identify with the city very much in terms of the lifestyle, the product that was being sold, but just really the way people live in Vancouver. But throughout this whole journey, I always thought that the two industries could come together, and the timing was never right. And when I was at PCMA in 2018, I was noticing the behaviors of the older generation, the younger generation of meeting attendees. And they were really quite different. The older generation, which I'm on the cusp of that, was really going out from 7 to 7, staying out late, repeat, rinse and repeat for days on end. And then the younger generation, I noticed they wanted to get their workouts in. They wanted to eat well. They still balanced their work as well as home. And so I approached David Peckinpah and Greg Vogt and said, because I've known them for years in the industry, and said, I think it's time, because they always kind of knew what I was thinking. And so they lent me the research team at Merits and said, let's study it. We totally understand the thinking, but let's study it. So this was 2018. So as a independent consultant, I ran 3 research studies for them, 2 internal, 1 external. I went in front of the customer advisory board to validate the thinking, and it was fabulous because it really did give us some tweaks that were just perfect. And then I did pilot testing all around North America. We had 15, 20 pilot tests to actually see what those theories and validate those theories and how they show up in a live event. And then, so they hired me on December 24th, 2019. And I was at Vancouver, Tourism Vancouver for 16 years. So I really wanted to give a long notice because that's just what I wanted to do. And so I started at Merits on March 2nd of 2020. And so as you can imagine, the whole thinking was kind of put on pause. It wasn't put on pause, but it wasn't a design principle that we were leading with because we were just figuring out what was next. And so then I was furloughed in May of 2020. And then I worked on the EIC's Business Recovery Task Force during the summer, as well as I was the PCMA chapter president. And so it gave me time to kind of focus on those 2 projects. But then when the Merits called me back, in the fall of 20, they said, we're all in and let's come back. Let's really look at this as a design principle and really look at how we design our events based on the health and well-being of the guests at the heart of the experience. So it was really, it's a lifelong journey. That's a long-winded question for your answer for your question.
Well, we've got a lot of context now, which I think is really important for anybody listening to the podcast. I actually have 3 follow-up questions that I'd like you to expand on a little bit.
Sure.
You mentioned at one point that the event industry was never really ready to connect with well-being.
Sure.
And you kind of alluded to some sort of demographic kind of preference in some sense. Why do you think that is? Why do you think we may be ready now, or do you feel like we're ready now? What do you think flipped that switch?
Well, I think COVID flipped the switch, to answer the last part of the question first. I think COVID really awoke our industry to seeing how we design differently and how we accommodate people differently. I think we were never ready because I believe that we were just going so fast paced as an industry, as a society. I can tell you, I was in the tech world during Oracle Open World, HP Developers Conference. And the last thing people wanted to worry about is their own personal well-being when they're those, you know, not just those events, they're totally changed now because I know Oracle Open World does amazing things in terms of personal well-being. But back in that time, it was the .com. It was the, you know, 90s. It was not, they were not there yet. And then when 9/11 happened, people were getting ready, but they weren't quite ready yet. And then it was just getting back into business again. And then, you know, 2008 happened and we had to get back into business again. So there's been some blips in the industry as well as just society that have held us back a little bit. But I think the pandemic is a silver lining for our industry and well-being, that it has really made us stop and think a little bit more.
Really interesting. I wonder if, and we talk a lot about the hybrid workforce and,
yes,
you know, working from home, and you know, a lot of people talk about it as a strategic thing, as a preference, as a, hey, I get to be home with my kids. But if you think about it through the greater lens of well-being, is it just the natural evolution of actually it's better for my well-being if I don't have an hour commute each way, or worse, if I don't travel all the time, and if I don't go to an office and have to leave my kids early, etc. It feels like a sort of natural evolution of, hey, we tried this, we like this, respect my well-being, or I'd prefer to respect my well-being if I can, right?
Right, exactly. And that explains the great resignation, in my opinion. And people are making choices. Before, we didn't have the choice. If you worked downtown, you had to drive downtown, right? And you made those sacrifices. But we have, through the COVID pandemic, have seen that there are alternative ways of doing things. And it's disrupted, in my opinion, in a good way, right? When I went to work for Toys in Vancouver, I've always worked from home since I worked at Smith Buckland. And my big thing was I wanted to be home with my kids. I'll go on the road for you, but I don't want an office out of anywhere because I want to be able to juggle that balance. And it worked really well for me personally. And I knew I wasn't alone. I knew that there were a lot of the people that did what I did for other cities. They were all working moms, and they need balance. Husbands are working, they're traveling. That work from home experience was important to us. And so it really developed a culture before the pandemic in a lot of the people that I was interacting with. And, when I was interviewing for Vancouver, there was a few other jobs that I was interviewing for, and they weren't work from home. And I was like, no. So I think that a lot of what we're seeing now is based on the pandemic, which I don't think is a bad thing.
Definitely a silver lining there, a potential silver lining for those who are able to take advantage of that.
Yes.
You mentioned a couple of things that I also wanted to kind of go a little bit deeper into. You mentioned that there were some tweaks that came out of the research. You did some research internally and externally, and then there was a tweaks that you made to the project. And I'm really curious what those tweaks were and why they were so important. You know, were they something that you were expecting to see in one direction and it was actually going in a different direction?
It was very fascinating, Miguel. So I came in, and I'm a big person when it comes to frameworks and positioning things in a framework so people can think about it different or in a context where they can understand it. And so we had the 8 dimensions of well-being, which is the National Wellness Institute. They also have these dimensions. And so I came in with the 8 dimensions of well-being, which are physical, mental, intellectual, spiritual, social, career, financial, environmental, and I think I said one twice. Anyway, there's a lot to remember there. And so I presented that to our customer advisory board, and they were like, that's too many. And then, so I was like, okay, let's think about this. And then we started introducing it to some customers, and the words mental and spiritual stopped them, especially in the corporate world, because they were like, we don't want to talk about, back then, mental health, and we don't want to talk about spiritual health. And so I changed it from 8 dimensions of well-being to 5 dimensions of well-being because of that thinking that there are some topics that people don't really want to bring up in the business world. Now, we have 5 dimensions of well-being. We wrote an ebook on it, and it's personal well-being, social well-being, career well-being, financial well-being, environmental well-being. And that personal well-being includes, if you think about your own personal health, you think about your mental health, and that is so important. And, that's the other thing with the pandemic that I think has been really, really helpful is people focusing on their mental health. And intellectual health is an important aspect, as well as spiritual health. It doesn't mean that it's a religious thing. It's just a belief in a purpose. And so people were looking at that a little bit differently than what it was intended. And then once we refined it, it was very well received.
Great. So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense because you kind of took the objections to something and you were still able to move it forward without, you kind of combined some of those objections or some of those themes into others. That makes a lot of sense. I did have another point that I wanted to pick on from what you spoke about earlier, which was design principle. And I'm quite familiar with the Merit's design principles, but could you just unpack that to make sure that everybody understands how that works, and maybe explain what the other design principles are so that they understand how wellness fits into that?
Sure. Well, from my perspective is in our world, we design with intention, right? And purpose. And this really puts that design purpose and focus on the human and really designing with the human at the heart of the experience. So really looking at their needs and understanding their needs so that, for example, if they're traveling, first time out traveling, if it's a group that hasn't met yet, looking at what they need in terms of health, safety, time to relax, time to connect with home, not getting up at the crack of dawn to go to a networking breakfast, giving them time to work out. So I call it a design principle because it's a really intentional, purposeful way of thinking when you're designing the events. And so it's kind of the add-on to our other design principles, which are really, seeking to understand what the guests want. But it's really kind of layering it on those design principles, because it's really making the person and the human at the center so that they perform at their peak.
Okay, great. I think it's really good to have that in full, or just to have go a little bit deeper into that to make sure everybody understands that.
Yeah.
You've worked in all sorts of parts of the industry, and you've represented destinations. You've worked with events. You've done lots of different things. How do you explain to people that you know, maybe your family and friends, what you do if they're not connected to the industry?
A very good question, and one I struggled with my whole career. But we're getting better at it because people understand the power of events with COVID too. So, one of my biggest heroes is my dad, and he passed away a couple of years ago. But he was always like, "I still don't get what you do, honey." And what I would always tell him is, I try to bring people together and connect them in through various different activations and experiences, and In speaking with him, he always understood experiences and leaving memorable impressions in people's life. He was a sales guy at heart. And so he understood that. And he understood how, when you create amazing experiences, people have memorable moments in their lifetime memories. And so that has been one of my barometers. The other barometer has been my two children, my girls, Bella and Gabby. And, all they knew was mommy traveled a lot. And now they're 19 and 20. And Isabella is actually going to go into the hospitality industry. So she sees the passion that I have for the industry. She sees the commitment, and she wants to have that kind of excitement in her career. She's not a desk person, and by any stretch of the imagination, she's like, I see the kind of fun and the great relationships you've built, and they're lifelong friends. And she loves that. And I'm doing a lot of work in the sustainability world now within Merit's, and she's very passionate about that. And she's like, I never would have thought the events industry would allow somebody to get into sustainability. So it's really kind of seeing that evolution of new professionals come around, because they're seeing that they can touch some pretty significant issues in the business world and do it at a different slant in the business world too. So it's exciting.
Excellent. So I think it would be a really good time to talk a little bit about your particular role. So you've talked a little bit about your journey. Can you tell us what being a well-being leader means? I guess both internally and externally, if you have several different kind of facing parts of your role.
Sure. Well, when I went to work for Merit's, they said, what do you want your title to be? And I said, well, I think well-being leader sounds good. So I kind of made it up. and that's what you see in some corporations. My job is really in the design studio. So we have Merit's Global Events. We have the corporate clients that we work with in the association, trade show, and live events clients. And the design studio is our boutique agency within the corporation that works with both of those markets. And so I sit in the design studio. And so we are called upon from all of our clientele to help them design their events. So that's my first job, is working with clients to design their events around well-being. So I've done everything from corporate virtual conference and running a well-being challenge to designing a corporate well-being retreat for certain executives, to doing a well-being design for a large trade show so that people have space to go to chill out once they're having a break in the show. So, and then the other side of things, I've worked with associations to evolve their staff well-being as well as their attendee well-being. So it's kind of a mixed bag, Miguel, depending on what people are looking at and needing. And one of the other things that we did is we created a well-being network. And so I have a network of suppliers that I've known from the wellness side of things. And there's a whole different argument on wellness versus well-being. But so I've
well, curated. Let's unpack that. Well-being, sure. Wellness. Well, what's the difference, or what's the argument, let's say, and then maybe you can sure. unpack that for us.
Sure. We chose the word well-being because well-being is a state of mind. It is a state of being, whereas wellness is an activity in our minds. So like you can go out and do a run. That's an activity. That's a personal wellness activity. But the five dimensions, when those five dimensions of well-being are generally moving, balance, moving forward, it's like a ball rolling, right? A person is moving forward. If there is one of those five dimensions that's not working properly, that it might cause it to bump along a little. An example would be, say somebody's not doing well financially, but they're great personally, professionally, and they have all the future. But if they have some financial issues, it's going to cause stress. It's going to cause worry. And so we're working on a program right now on financial well-being. So it's really about a state of mind. And quite honestly, there are some countries out there now that are looking at the well-being index of their population versus the GDP. And really, they want to. There's a great TED Talk on it about how countries need to look at the well-being index of their population to make sure that the population is happy and healthy. And so I'm fascinated by that. I think that it might be really something for the future in terms of how governments look at their population. But really the bottom line, Miguel, is well-being is a state. It's not, it's just a way of being, if you will.
Yeah, no, the secret's in the word, right? Well-being. So a way of being. I think that's yep. that's a simple way to think about it.
Are you ready to celebrate your successes in the world of meetings and events? The Skift Meetings Awards are back for 2024, recognizing the most innovative business events companies across 15 categories, and we want you to be a part of it. Winners will feature on Skift Meetings, sending a clear signal to events professionals around the world that these are partners they can rely on. The final deadline for submissions is June 11th. We encourage you to start your submission today to secure the best entry rates. For more information and to start your submission, head to live.skift.com.
So, you know, fascinating role, all sorts of activations, activities, both internal, external, you know, clients. I'd love to talk a little bit about how it works in practice and what kind of long-term impacts can you measure or can you kind of track in some sense? I understand, you know, you did the IMX well-being challenge or sustainability challenge, I believe.
Yes.
And that was tracking kind of physical activity and different things we're doing throughout the day. And feel free to, you know, kind of expand on that a little bit. But I'd love to kind of see, you know, you're inspiring people at an event to be more physically active, to do things that are better for them, you know, that are better for mm-hmm. their well-being. Does that really have an impact in the long term? And how do you assess that in some way?
Sure. That's a really good question. And for IMAX America, we did a well-being challenge. And, you know, our partner Heka Health has done some amazing, they've done a lot of work with MPI, PCMA, IMAX, a lot of industry organizations. We just did a MPI well-being challenge that everybody who entered into the challenge took a $5 donation and it went to the MPI Foundation for the betterment of the industry's future. For IMAX Frankfurt, we did a sustainability challenge. And I wanted to do a challenge that obviously with nature as their moniker for sustainability with IMAX and what Karina and her team are doing. I wanted to take a twist and showcase the sustainable efforts that IMAX is doing to enhance the show. One of the things, like I said, environmental well-being is one of my five dimensions. And we have designed products around that environmental well-being. And one of them is measuring the carbon footprint of an event, which has been hugely accepted. And lots of people are coming to us to help them do that because people don't know how to do it. And so and that's a topic that keeps coming up, as you know. And so I wanted to showcase at an industry event how people can see what people are doing in their trade show booth, what the show organizers are doing in terms of their sustainable practices. So we took that one dimension of the five dimensions and expanded it. So we did everything from showcasing what the Messi is doing with a sustainable walking tour of the facility. The Frankfurt DMO gave us some things that they are doing, and they gave us prizes. So it was really kind of cool. So they could engage after they explained their story. Then we went around the halls and put QR codes so that it was kind of a scavenger hunt, if you will, so people could learn new things about the sustainable practices of IMAX America, or excuse me, IMAX Frankfurt. So one of them was in the People and Planet Pledge Village. They had a pledge. So it was encouraging people to take the pledge, attending certain sessions, they get bonus points. And so the part about the challenge was people would get all these extra bonus points. They would walk, they'd get their steps in, they'd be counted for. And then we had all these amazing prizes that people gave to just encourage sustainable practices, right? And so it's really neat to watch people focus on themselves when they're at a big event and their learning as well as their well-being. And so we had so many people just come and really say thank you for showcasing what IMAX Frankfurt was doing because they didn't really know. And they knew, but they didn't read it. And this is kind of a more practical application where they learned something new. The other thing we did is there's a couple different ways to highlight different pieces within an event. And sustainability to us, obviously, is more about the UN SDGs, the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. And those aren't just about greening events. They're also about making the world a better place. And, you know, being good health and well-being, and then all the green experiences, but also no poverty, things like that. And a partnership for the goals, those are all some of the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And we, as part of the sustainability challenge, we put a button in there that people could learn about the the traffic cam for human trafficking, the fight against human trafficking. And so people could learn about the fight against human trafficking in this experience. So they had the scavenger hunt experience, but they also had times when they had a brief moment that they could sit and learn about other things that relate to the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So it was really, really quite lovely.
So it sounds like you're kind of balancing that inspiring of people and showing them new things with some practical items, mm-hmm. etc. And do you find that, I don't know if you do many events where you have the same audience, but do you see kind of growth and people that weren't interested in
in well-being and wellness maybe kind of getting more interested as they use tools and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we went from IMAX Frankfurt to MPI, WEC. And we had a couple of people that were super interested in Frankfurt, but then they came in hot and competitive in San Francisco, and they were super excited because they wanted to win some great prizes. We had some fabulous prizes in Frankfurt, but then we had even fabulous prizes in San Francisco. We had Caesars Entertainment give a weekend away at Caesars Palace and two weekends away at Paris. And then San Francisco Giants, they gave away weekends. One of them was going to the Def Leppard concert at Oracle Park. You know, people were really competitive for that, but it was really some people dipping their toes in at IMAX and then coming in and really wanting to be competitive in MPI. And I've seen that as we've done these at PCMA as well as IMAX America. So it's really about a partnership. And that's one of the things that I find really cool is we're coming in, making a stand. And then there's a lot of people like Caesars, Giants Entertainment, Frankfurt DMO, and many more organizations are saying, hey, can we support this? Because it's a more authentic way of showing up, in my opinion. Oh, hold on. So we've created an experience. So if you hit certain mile markers, not mile markers, that's not the right word, but step levels, then you're entered into a drawing for those major prizes. So it's not the top stepper. It's, you know, a lot of people feel exactly what you were saying, Miguel, and we want it to be more inclusive and more balanced. And so if you hit a certain level and if you, you know, there's prizes based on all of those different levels. So, and we get really good feedback every time we do this. So one of the, I had somebody come up to me and say, hey, what if I'm in a wheelchair? This is a walking challenge. And we have a piece in there that, a tool in there that has the ability to convert minutes on a wheelchair to steps. So it's really kind of neat to see. And granted, that's not a perfect science, but we've tried to be really inclusive to make people feel welcome no matter what their abilities are.
Talking about inclusivity, do you also do this for virtual events or for an online audiences? Mm-hmm. How?
Well, that's a good question. So I had a corporate client and it was my favorite one virtually, but we had several throughout the 3 years, 2 years that we've been doing all this. But my favorite one was, it was for their top performers and they had a virtual event for 3 days. And so we designed it so they could do things with their family while they're at home. And then they can post on social media and everybody saw it. And I mean, it was a global company. So it wasn't just, you know, North America or what have you, it was all over. But the challenge was when we did that is there were so many different levels of lockdown, right? So we had to design it so that people who were completely locked down were not feeling left out. So we designed things that they could do in a smaller environment, not necessarily getting out and walking for 3 miles or what have you. So it was really kind of interesting. We created a part of the app that can convert your Peloton time into steps. So there's, you know, different ways of doing it. But what I found about that one was the competition was so fun because, and it was a tech company and these guys are really competitive, right? And so they were so serious. It was really fun. But we also did, I did a workshop with them, a virtual workshop about how to do this. And they had teams. So we created a team aspect for it. And so different divisions were competing against each other. But the ultimate prize in this experience was the team that won got to donate $10,000 to a charity of choice on behalf of the company. So the thing that I find most fascinating is when there's a charitable piece, watch out, people are just very competitive, which I think is awesome.
That's great. And if it's a hybrid type of experience, then there's no reason why this won't work for both audiences, right?
No, in fact, at MPI, we had a hybrid experience for WEC, and the top stepper, we did a challenge for the chapters as well as the individuals. And the people that won the chapter challenge and the top stepper was a virtual attendee. Okay. So she would check in with us every day and she'd be like, hey, I'm so sore from doing all this, but thank you. It's kickstarted me. And I mean, it was really quite neat because it gave her the opportunity to connect with MPI in a way that she didn't. She was at home, right? I mean, she was just listening to things, but this is a active way of participation.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So, great projects, and thank you for sharing them with us. I think they're a really nice way to kind of look at this particular topic. I wanted to go back to that idea of, well-being and wellness being a design principle, and I wanted to kind of pick your brain about what does it mean when you really get to design an event with well-being as a core design principle, and I guess. Take it from the perspective, if you don't mind, of what makes an event go from good to great. How does using this design principle make that event, be a great event rather than just a good event?
Sure. That's a great question. And I think, we all want amazing feedback, right? And when people have great personal experiences, feel cared for, feel valued, feel important, then they're going to make it a great, they're going to feel like it's a great experience. So we've done this at our own events and some client events. Obviously, it's when that individual feels cared for, communicated with, feels informed, feels vested, and feels like they're contributing, then they're really going to come away with a great experience. Even little things. I mean, I know this is just the downtime, and it feels like people aren't programmed 24/7 while they're attending an event. It's a value that we're expressing to those people that their time means something and that we don't need to fill every single hour. And that there's so much beauty in the serendipitous connections that you make when you're at an event. And a lot of times, yes, when you're in education session or you're walking to and from general sessions, but just giving those, we had our Next Stand event last summer and we're gonna have it again this year, giving those times where you're just having downtime. I have a great picture of people eating breakfast and there's the, people in the front are in business casual attire and the people in the back of the picture are in workout gear. And they just went and did a walking or a running club, I think is what those gals had done. And so it was just giving them time for people to show up how they are and not be so stringent, if that makes sense. And really giving people time to enjoy it. Whereas I know for me, if I'm going to an event and there's not, every night is not programmed, I'm not complaining. And so now you have to balance the business side of it. I get it.
Yeah, I was going to say also, I mean, we've been talking about this for a while, how especially after the COVID pandemic, people really want some more free time and can, are actively seeking that for an event or at least expecting that. Are you seeing this in practice? And
yes.
And really, yes, okay, good to hear. Mm-hmm. But so my feeling is that people will see the breaks in the schedule and then go and pack in some calls back to the office or do some emails or do some other stuff. And are they then not getting the benefits from actually having a break that was kind of designed for them? I mean, I guess you have to give them the choice, right? But I feel like that seems to be the sort of go-to feature. Hey, I've got a break in the schedule. I'm going to pack this in with as much, regular work as I can.
It's all about choice, Miguel. You can't control people. You can't tell them what to do and what not to do. You can suggest that this is a time for you. I think the one that I've seen the most make a difference of any technique is starting later. And people starting not at 6 o'clock in the morning, right, with something. And I think that people value that quite a bit. And granted, if you're on the West Coast, it's harder to do for the East Coast people. But you got to just be mindful of how you design that and what that is intended for. So as the organizer, you can't control people. You can make suggestions, but you're not going to control them. If that's what they need to do, then that's what they need to do. But, you know, packing in times where they have a place to decompress, a lounge where they can go and sit and just be quiet, where they can, you know, a communal table so people have time to go and just answer those emails. I mean, we all take our computer wherever we go nowadays, right? And yeah. So it, just giving them time, it's the gift of time, in my opinion. And quite honestly, when we're home and we're working our 8 to 9, whatever hours you put in, you're not going out to dinner every night, right? And so if you're at an event for 3 or 4 nights, I get the value of going to dinner with people and all that kind of stuff, but it's building the relationships, which our industry is so good at, but it's just being able to balance it all and giving people the flexibility to balance it.
Yeah, it's all about creating those design or designing things in a way where you're actually giving people choice. And to be fair, you know, when you go into a keynote session, the amount of people that pull out their phones and check their emails, you know, they're going to do it anyway in some sense. So it's probably better to at least give them some time to do it. When they can focus.
Exactly. And even breakout sessions too, right? Do you think people might be on their computers taking notes while they're probably doing work, which is okay, exactly. Right? It's okay. And that's part of the design of breakouts, right? Give people that flexibility to move. Whereas I remember we would get as a planner, I'd be like, why are you leaving a breakout? You know, a long time ago, but now we don't look at it that way. So it's just, it's a much more inclusive, flexible environment that we need to create.
Absolutely. So thinking ahead to kind of the future of events, you know, if we look 5-10 years ahead, if things go well, if things go as you would like them to go and evolve in a positive way, how do you think events are going to change?
It's a really good question. And I think people are going to really evaluate their decision to attend. And if it's designed properly with flexibility, with choice, then I think the event will be successful. I think that there are so many events and so many, you know, I mean, think about our industry and how many industry events we can go to. I'm sure we're not the only industry like that. In fact, I know that. But it's going to have to be designed well, thought through, and the same old is not going to work, in my opinion. So it has to be an innovative, collaborative environment that people feel like they grow. And in my opinion, I think that there are, you know, some dinosaurs out there that if they don't change, that they're going to have to, they might go away. And I don't, you know, I can think of a couple off the top of my head, but at the same time, it's we as event professionals need to take the design super seriously, because that's gonna make our mark and make or break us, in my opinion.
Very interesting. You know, feel free to call them out if you want to, but I know that you didn't, so I won't insist. But so what do you think could prevent us from getting there? You know, what are the challenges that might get in the way of us getting to this, you know, ideal situation where events are designed in this way?
And we didn't even go down this path, Miguel, in this conversation, is sustainability and the sustainable practices of our event, of our industry. I lead with a couple of different people, including Steve O'Malley and Ben Gudiver, and within our company, and Amy Kramer, our sustainability of our company, as well as our client events. And so we have really been zeroing in on that for the last year or so, and how we're designing events, how we're, as an industry, showing up. At COP26, we had the net zero carbon events team make a commitment to the world leaders on how we're going to show up. And if we don't start designing with sustainability in mind and reducing our waste, reducing our carbon footprint, it is my belief that, and this is just Rachel's opinion, that we could get regulated. And that could really, really be a problem if we're being told that there's no carpet at a trade show, there's no, you know, various different things that, depending on, I just think we are on the cusp of being watched very closely. And I think we have a huge opportunity, and I've done a lot of studying on this and exposure to it. The fashion industry, they relied on their consumers to choose sustainable choices when it came to clothing, and it did not go very well. And this was years in the past. Whereas we have the opportunity, if we design with sustainability in mind, then we can lessen our impact. Whereas if we rely on the attendee to do that sustainable practice, it might not get there. But if we design it with sustainability in mind and require the attendee to do it, then we have the business to business ability to make an impact versus business to consumer ability to make an impact. So I think that if we don't follow some of the standards of practice, measuring your carbon footprint, designing with sustainability in mind, which is part of well-being because it's environmental well-being, then we're going to have some significant ramifications, in my opinion.
Fascinating. A lot of food for thought there. And I really like how you connect well-being and sustainability so well, which of course, you know, very connected, but not always talked about in the same sentence. So I think it's interesting to connect those very closely.
Yes. And one of the things that was so funny, somebody said to me once, they're like, you know, I can understand the five dimensions really easily, and I can remember those, but I can't remember this UN Sustainable Development Goals. So I sat down, because they are so aligned, because SDG number 3 is good health, promoting good health and well-being, right? I mean, it's just, it's an SDG. So I sat down and mapped the UN SDGs to the five dimensions, and it matches perfectly. So in my little spreadsheet or my PowerPoint, if you lean into the five dimensions, you're leaning into the UN SDGs. It's really easy to go from left to right, but going right to left, leaning into the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, you're leaning into the five dimensions. It's super hard. People are like, I don't know, I'm so overwhelmed. But if you look at those five dimensions, you think, hey, I am leaning into these UN SDGs. And we do a scorecard for people showing how they lean into the UN SDGs through the five dimension well-being. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. I think, you know, we've been running stories on sustainability, and now, for example, the scope 3, mm-hmm. Has been updated, the kind of the way that they're tracking scope 3. And yeah, we did an article about that, and I looked into it, and kind of unpacking what that means is not mm-hmm. necessarily an easy thing. If you're in that space, if you talk about scope 3 and the kind of rules around it, it comes very naturally, but it's not a language that we're using yet, or that most of us use yet. So I think it's important to unpack that and make sure we kind of understand the impacts of those changes.
Yeah, and we have a couple of different partners that we work with to help us measure, and then we give design recommendations around how to improve and lower your emissions at an event. And I love what I do. This is the most fascinating yet the most challenging piece of all of what I do, is because it's so foreign, and the vernacular is not something that comes like this to us, because it's new. But we're not the only industry that's saying that, right? It's every industry is out there going, what are we doing? You know, I mean, there's some really, we're being handed down what we have to do and how we have to account for it. And so it's just been really a fascinating learning experience. But when you ask my daughter about it, she knows all of it. It's quite funny.
Well, that's reassuring. I think that's good. And then at the same time, I think it's a big challenge, but we have a great opportunity to make a big difference, right? If we can actually affect those kind of emissions and everything connected to that, then we're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Rachel, we've covered a lot of ground here very, very quickly. It's flown by. I want to thank you for being on a podcast with us. I want to wrap up by asking you the question we ask all our guests, which is to recommend someone else that should be a guest on the podcast. Of course, this could be anybody from the same company, from another company, from an association, anybody you know that maybe could continue this conversation or lead us in a different direction that you would recommend.
Well, I have two. One is internal, one is external. So Amy Kramer, who's our head of innovation, she's absolutely the reason why I am here, because she has this innovation process that when you come with an idea and you flesh it out, it's spectacular. So she's with Marist Global Events. And then I'm not sure if this person has been on your podcast, but Tracy Suprap from Eating at a Meeting, she's fabulous. She totally gets the UN SDGs, well-being, but she really talks about eating at a meeting and making it worth people's while and not just giving them sugar and allergies. And she's really great and a lovely lady. So both of those are my recommendations.
Perfect. We appreciate the recommendations. We'll ask you for some topics to cover with them as well privately, so we can make sure to get a head start on both of our podcasts. Rachel, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for being with us today. And thank you for what you do. It's great to see people leading these types of areas of the industry.
It's been my pleasure. And thank you so much, Miguel. It's just an honor.